What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Clock's Running, the podcast for everything flag football officials. I'm Ant.
And I took, man, you got your mind off of things. What's up, man? Yeah,
why are you grinning already?
It's just a great day to be here, man.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man, there's been so much going on in the world, the wide world of flag football. It's crazy lately, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think the tournament in Mexico got everybody stirred up.
I mean, hey, you put $15,000 on the line, that's going to bring out some emotions for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hurts your feelings for sure.
Yeah, and I guess it, you know, you win some, you lose some, because one team from Mexico did win in the women's division, which I'm always excited about.
Of course. And of course, then, you hated the United States, we know.
And then, yeah, Hoosh had his all-star team that, you know, won the men's division. So, no, but the semifinal game in the men's division was really good. The championship was kind of a blowout, but that being said, yeah, usually, right? The semifinal game is usually the best one. Right. That being said, though, IFAB games, I went back and watched a good amount of them. It's so funny because everyone thinks IFAB and it's going to bring on all these penalty flags. It's like two or three a game. Like, it's really, you know, when they're used to it and all the players understand this is what we're doing, absolutely, they adapt. And you know, it really doesn't have too many penalty flags. So,
right.
Anyway, though, as far as Clock's Running goes and our podcast, we still want to spend a little bit more time on Tampa. So, yep. That being said, if you want to introduce our guest tonight, Jacob.
Absolutely. Bring him in. So this is the co-founder of USA Flag. He's one of the GOATs, in my opinion. He makes everything better for everybody, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, however you want to look at it. Welcome, Travis.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here. Thank you guys for having me on.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Do you consider yourself behind the scenes or in front of the scenes? I guess we got to figure that out first.
I think it's a little bit of both. At this point, more behind the scenes for sure. At the events, you know, more leading this, I guess, charge when it comes to just kind of future strategy and stuff like that. But yeah, no, we lean on Jacob and those guys to run the events, and I'm very much behind the scenes now when it comes to the tournaments themselves.
Yeah, for sure. So before you kind of talk about every new guest we bring on, they share their origin story, but I've had a lot of experiences with you, Travis, and I wanted to, you know, over the last handful of years. So, you know, I just wanted to share a little bit. First and foremost, I can admit, I don't think my team ever beat Allen Elite, unfortunately.
That was a short stint, but we did have some good games.
But I, you know, I'm not going to be the guy that says the refs were involved or anything like that. You had a solid team. It was you and Kevin and a few other guys. I just think about the tournament in Seattle. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I remember that one pretty well. I had a good time out there.
Yeah, I mean, besides the fact that it rained like 72 of the 75 hours that I was there, it was a good time, and I think we ended up going against you guys in the Forest Championship, in the Gauntlet Championship, in the Fire Championship.
All three.
And,
and how does second place feel,
Ant? You know, hey, you know what, though? In the points rankings, we looked pretty good after that tournament. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, you did. That was a fun time. I definitely remember when we had our Allen Elite team going. It was we had some good battles with you guys for sure at a couple tournaments, I think. So yeah, Seattle was a lot of fun, even though it was wet. But yeah.
So. No, for sure. So on a personal level, Travis, I want you to know that this organization and everything you've been a part of creating has been huge in my life, and flag football and the opportunity to be able to travel and just being able to, you know, go somewhere where everyone, it's just the environment, you know, the culture, and everyone's, you know, having a good time. And even if we're, you know, yeah, things get heated or whatever during games, like it's amazing what you've created. And it's been something that's helped me immensely with my mental health and just my overall well-being. So I just want to share that with you.
I love to hear that. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, hopefully other people feel the same way, and we want it to be more than just, you know, a game. We want it to be, and a lot of people, it is their lifestyle and what they look forward to and their vacations. And yeah, it's what keeps them sane sometimes. So I love hearing that. Appreciate that. Thanks for supporting us for a long time. So yeah, thanks to you.
For sure. So just go ahead and lay it on us. I know that there, you've got you know, a long standing relationship with flag football. So sure. What is your origin story? What brought you to this point?
So, I mean, going all the way back, I first started playing flag in college, just freshman year of college, straight out of high school, playing like the local city leagues and then intramurals at A&M. I still list on my LinkedIn that my degree is in intramurals, because I didn't graduate from A&M because I pretty much was just playing intramurals and was just learned to love flag football in college. And I started selling like little flag football playbooks that I made in Microsoft Paint way back in the day, and was just kind of fell in love with it. And I came out of college and started working locally with some groups that were doing some flag football stuff, and immediately started playing. So this was back in like 2007, 2008. And then played for a while in some of the national events, but more locally here in the Dallas area, and some of the Flag Football X events that I originally kind of helped build and worked with them, and just love flag football. It was about 2015 when Chuck, my business partner, who most everybody knows, the co-founder with me on, you know, at the time Flag Football World Championship Tour, now USA Flag. I was actually running a little blog called Flag Spin that was just more content, and I just love the sport of flag football and was creating strategies and plays and just some articles about tournaments. And he found me. We started talking about flag football and you know, what we love about it. We had to set up a phone call. He wanted to sell some sponsorships and was working with some event owners, and we just came up and with a concept after brainstorming for hours to kind of work with the tournaments and help them get better, the ones that already existed, by bringing sponsors and kind of connecting all of those tournaments on a tour, which we called the Flag Football World Championship Tour. And really, it was just a way for us to justify going and playing and spending money and traveling to all of these tournaments and finding a way to, you know, sell the wife on, you know, being traveling for 12 months a year and doing all the things that we were going to do. And didn't really have a plan on it turning into a business, but it kind of took off. And then we started running a couple of our own events in Orlando in 2018 was 2017. Orlando was our first major event where we put a pretty significant cash prize and had like 200 and something teams at that event, which was only our second tournament ever. And honestly was a nightmare in every sense of the word for us running it. I literally was as stressed as I've ever been. Almost everything that could go wrong went wrong. I left being like, I'm never doing this again. Like, there's no way. And, you know, settled down a little bit, talked to Chuck about what we could do better, you know, started talking to some other bigger conversations. And, you know, luckily we had a really good staff around us at the time that we had just kind of started to get to know. And, you know, we stuck with it and we started running more events. And, you know, whenever the USFTL staff kind of moved over and started working with us, that helped a ton. You know, having Natalie was a complete game changer for us. Cause before it was just two idiots, me and Chuck, trying to run this company and trying to do all the detail work. Neither one of us can sit still for 5 minutes and, you know, do anything worth doing on a daily basis. So she changed everything for us, and everybody knows and loves Natalie. It's been around for a long time, and the other staff that we kind of brought over from there. And, you know, it just kind of snowballed over the last, you know, 5 years. It's grown tremendously, not just us, but everybody in flag, the sport as a whole. And I'd like to think we had, you know, something to do with that. But, you know, and now we're where we're at. I mean, it's just the Olympic announcement has been, you know, amazing for the sport and the awareness of the sport and how, you know, professional they view it. And so has, you know, the women's sport getting into college and, you know, now that there's scholarship opportunities. And so it's just a really good time to be around and be in the sport, and we're blessed to have been a part of it.
Yeah. What tournament do you think was the first tournament of yours that wasn't a nightmare? Do you remember that one where it just like things shifted in the right direction?
Man, I would say, but from an event standpoint, it might have gotten all the way to like probably 2020 or 2021. Right after we had the really, really bad event in Orlando in 2020 that we will not speak of, the 2021 tournament in Panama City Beach, for all intents and purposes, I just for some reason remember feeling like, you know, this event went really smooth from start to finish. It wasn't a massive event. We'd kind of spread out the youth and the adults over 2 weekends. I don't remember. Was that your first tournament with us, Jacob?
It was.
That was the only reason, obviously. Clearly, well, Jacob was the only reason that I remember feeling that way, obviously. But, you know, I mean, and we've had some really good events since then, but there's never a perfect event by any stretch. Yeah. I mean, there's always something we can do better or something that goes wrong that's out of our control, and probably both in on all occasions. So, you know, but we have gotten to a point where we've minimized what can go wrong. You know, we've got a really good platform and system and directors and staff who know what we want, and they, you know, are go out there and can execute it. And aside from, you know, travel delays or weather or, you know, personnel issues occasionally, the rest of it has gotten to where we can manage it. And so it's nice, you know, it's nice to be at a point where every event is not a nightmare anymore, you know, as much.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. I got to back up a little bit here. You're telling me you don't control the weather in Florida in January?
I think somebody does, because they keep coming down on us whenever that shouldn't. It's like, and the week right after is 75 degrees and sunny every single year, it seems like. We just can't find the right week. But yeah, I wish. I really wish I could, but no, unfortunately. You know, I mean, Tampa was a wild one because we had four of probably the best wet days of weather we've ever had. And then one of by far the worst days we've ever had on the last day. So it was a little bit of a mixed bag, but at least it was the last day and not one of the first days or even the middle, because that would have made the whole event miserable. So it could have been worse, but no, I wish I could.
For sure. So speaking of Tampa, you know, this year's Tampa, just talk about that. Tell us the good, the bad, the ugly of that event.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa was a big one for us, I think, this year. Every year we kind of take what we hope is an incremental step up. You know, we always go back to the drawing board after every tournament and think, what can we do better? And generally every year I feel like and feel good about that we've made incremental progress. And I feel like this year just felt like we took maybe two steps. Like it just was a little bit of a bigger jump. From the atmosphere, having Tyreek Hill out there, all the sponsors, the broadcast with CBS, the Guinness Book of World Records, and good weather, you know, for the first 4 days helps everything tremendously from attitudes and, you know, what everybody's experience is. So it just, you know, felt bigger. We had a lot of really good eyeballs on us too, from like, you know, potential bigger sponsors and other things that we're just trying to do to grow the sport and provide more opportunities for everybody. So that was good. You know, obviously Sunday was miserable for the staff and the players and the coaches and the parents and all of those things. You know, I'm actually really, really proud of how our staff handled it. And, you know, I know everybody looks at it differently, but man, when you're in a situation where you're closed down for hours and this is a travel day, we can't just push it back another day. We can't reschedule, you know, our youth already played pool play. They still have to play playoffs and, you know, having to rearrange schedule and make it work. It is so much more work than people realize. And I think most people would have just canceled at that point, because it would have been too hard to recover from, or, you know, wouldn't have been able to, or been there longer and stuff. So it was bad, but it was also good in that sense, because, you know, things are going to happen. So from my end, it was great to see how, you know, we were able to get through that, even with those circumstances that were outside of anybody's control. But it was fun, man. I hope everybody else felt the same way. It feels like they did. We had a lot of really good responses. I know there's always going to be issues with officials and, you know, some other things that are outside of our control, or issues that, you know, we, you know, make mistakes occasionally. Directors make mistakes. Officials make mistakes. I make mistakes, you know, but we always, you know, try our best to correct them. And I feel like it went well from that standpoint. And I will say that we, you know, we're already at the drawing board talking about Tampa next year and already have a bunch of really good plans. And our sponsors and our bigger partners, this was their, like Body Armor, this was their first year with us. And from what they've told us, they were blown away and want to go in more and want to, you know, get to more events. And so all of that just snowballs into a better experience, you know, the more people can see an event like Tampa. So yeah, it was good. I feel like for us this year, I'm happy that it went well for most people as well.
Yeah. Jacob, you feel like, lightning delays and rain delays that happened in Nashville kind of better prepared you and the other directors for what happened in Tampa?
It was a great practice run because I mean, it was almost identical, you know, much larger scale. And fortunately, everybody kind of fell into a role of, hey, this is what I need to do to get everything back rolling. But it was, you know, ducks on the water is probably the best way to describe it. You know, at the surface, you know, everybody looks like they're smooth sailing, everything's okay. But right underneath, you know, feet are paddling, feet are kicking, you know, frantically trying to keep everything moving. So yeah, I think Nashville definitely helped as far as getting your mind right for what's supposed to happen. I also think it takes a special group of people kind of to echo what Travis said to make that work.
For sure.
And hats off to everybody who did make that, you know, from the staff to the officials getting to where they needed to be and doing what they needed to do as well.
Yeah, and Travis, I don't know if you know this, but apparently here in Ohio, you know, guys really think they can race and step up to Tyreek Hill with no issues at all. I don't know if you saw that video. But
I did briefly. I don't remember everything about it. But, yeah, and they're not the smartest sometimes. That's all right.
It's funny because I heard one of those players like during a game that night talking about it still, like, yeah, I'm the one that stepped up to Tyreek Hill. I'm like, okay, come on.
It was pretty funny, but yeah. Don't think that one was advised, but yeah.
So Travis, from not so much from a player standpoint, but in your role now, is there a format that you love that's your favorite to watch?
You know, I still just love the traditional 5-on-5 non-contact, like our primary base style that we have the most teams in. But I loved Gauntlet when it first came out. I haven't played it in like a year. But Gauntlet, you know, we went out kind of out the gate and played it in a couple of tournaments with that Allen Elite team, you know, that you were talking about. And I had a lot of fun playing that. That was definitely one of my favorite styles for a while. It doesn't feel like it's really caught on at the level, and it's just harder to make some of those divisions. So I still know 5-man non-contact in and out, and that's my favorite. 4-man, not anymore. I just couldn't do it. You know, I can quarterback a little bit, but I couldn't play anywhere else for it at all. You know, and I do like the aired out style. I've only played it a couple times because I don't play as often as I used to, but that style, I think I love that it's growing really fast and that a lot of teams are playing it, because I think that that's going to be a style that probably is our second, you know, most popular before too long, if it's not already. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So looking ahead to this coming year, what changes have you guys made for as far as the tournaments go?
So first off, we're kind of stepping back a little bit from the quantity of tournaments that we've run in the past. So we slimmed the schedule down a little bit so that it's easier for people to get to all the events. And we made sure that the events that we did pick are generally in, you know, good travel destinations that players will want to. We've got a couple new ones, some, you know, fan favorites and ones that have always been big events coming up like Vegas and some others. So the biggest change, though, beyond that is just how our series operates. Every year our national championship moves around, you know, whether it was it's been from Memorial Day all the way to, I think, October one year, and everywhere in between. And this year, what made the most sense was to look at putting every event leading into nationals and then having our national championship feed directly into our world championships. Whereas, because it's at the end of our schedule, it's closer to the end of November, which is a great time for the Arlington National Championships. That weekend before Thanksgiving is always a away game for the Dallas Cowboys because they always play home on Thanksgiving. So from a hotel standpoint, Arlington's going to be for the next foreseeable future, a great destination for hotels and everything else, but there's a lot of sports still going on. And it's just great weather and a good time of year to be there. So all of our events, points, and bids are going to feed into the national championship, because every event other than nationals and worlds will be before it. And then nationals, the only way to earn your seating for the world championships is in your national championships. So all of the teams that attend the Arlington Nationals in November, they'll basically end up with whatever their final standings are, will be their starting seeds going into Tampa. Anybody who was not at Arlington at the national championship, they'll start below that on the seeding list, and then it'll go by points just like our normal situation would have been. So it's extra important. We're basically trying to get as many teams as we can into Arlington to qualify and to rank, and being the number one seed going into Tampa is a really big deal. And not being in Arlington at all is going to put you back a little bit, because you're going to start below all the other teams that attended Arlington in your seeding. So it's a little bit of a change. I mean, it's putting more emphasis on the national championships, because we want the majority of the teams to kind of feed into the way that the schedule is operating and into nationals, into worlds. And Arlington's going to be a really good event this year, where we have some other pretty fun plans. We're talking about doing, you know, an opening ceremonies at Texas Live, doing possibly like a celebrity softball style event in partnership that might have some flag influence, like as a on that same night, and some other like kind of bigger events tied to that that we can do because it's in Arlington. So it's definitely an event they're not going to want to miss as well. But so that's the gist of it. It's not too different. It's just because the nationals is the end. Everything feeds into nationals, and now the only way to feed into world championships is through nationals. You can still register for Worlds as an open team. It'll be open to everybody. But you're going to want to be in nationals from a seeding standpoint, for sure.
Gotcha. Okay, then trying to switch gears a little bit. So clock's running. We're all about officials, and we love talking about rules and all of that. Now, I know that, you know, on social media, Travis, you're getting all kinds of this ref sucks and this ref does this and all that. But that's not beneficial to anybody. That never helps. So I just want to ask you, like, what is the rule or, you know, a few different rules that you hear about the most, whether it's good or bad? You know, what gets the most noise as far as rules go?
I get a lot of questions revolving – a lot of them are just based on rules that are we've changed or tweaked or might be different. And other ones, like starting without a flag on, I get asked about a lot. You know, I guess just different rules in regards to contact or jumping or, you know, what's allowed. You know, most – because we have over the years kind of slowly changed our rules, a lot of rushing questions. And for a long time, that was a big question is how the rush works. How to, like, can the rusher go straight to the quarterback? What if he changes his lane? You know, what if the quarterback rolls? Can he do, you know? So it's a lot of, like, technical stuff. But a lot of it is because before we came in, it was the Wild West. Everybody was using completely different rules. And so, and even the officials are coming to our world championships from areas that they're reffing the rest of the year under completely different rules. And so we understand, and we're trying. That's why we've put a lot of emphasis in trying to standardize the rules as much as we can and get, you know, other groups to start working with them.
Right.
But yeah, those would be the ones that I can think of. But and there've been plenty that I don't, you know, that I, you know, I'm not, I didn't understand or, you know, that I pushed for and I've been wrong about when I was playing too. Like, Jacob, and I'm sure you've all seen it. So.
No, for sure. I think back to, I think it was the first time that there was co-ed aired out, and I think you played in it, Travis. And I think I was officiating one of those first games in Vegas, and I think all of us had questions about that format. So
yeah, definitely. I remember a lot of questions coming up. Like, and sometimes, you know, we've created a lot of styles, and there have definitely been times where, you know, we thought we had all the rules fleshed out and we didn't, you know? And so, you know, we have to amend them or add things or tweak it or clarify and all that. So that's pretty much an every tournament situation. We're always coming back and saying, we need to add this, we need to update this, or we need to change that. So yeah, it happens, unfortunately, but.
Yeah. Jacob, would you agree that probably impeding the rush is what you get the most feedback from?
Oh, absolutely. That's the most controversial thing, because that's where, you know, intent, judgment, you know, all that stuff comes into play, and people don't consider all of that when they're looking at it. It's all they expect it to be just black and white and no questions asked. And you know, there's so many different scenarios and things, you know, things can happen. I try to say flag football, it's, you know, anything's possible. Or, you know, dumb stuff happens all the time, and people just don't get that.
Yeah.
So
also the catching, like whether it's a catch or not, like a quick catch being knocked out, you know, did he have possession long enough? That gets asked and posted and all the time. But yeah,
flag catch. Is it a flag catch? Is it this? Mm-hmm. Is it that? And it's like, yeah, you're just making stuff up at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So just a couple more questions for you, Travis. So something that we talked a lot about on this show is what, you know, who the GOAT of flag football is. And I think everyone, depending on when they played or when they got introduced to flag football, they might have a different answer. And so Travis, you being so involved and being around for a long period of time, I'm interested to know who your GOAT of flag football is.
All right. So I'm going to have a men's and a women's. Can I do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So on the men's side, for me, it would definitely be Hoosh. I've known Hoosh since before. He's been playing since before I've been playing at a national level, even though he's younger. And he's just was always incredible. And even before we really had our series, he had a run of dominance that I haven't seen in a long time, or his whole team, but he was a major part of that. And, you know, at the time, he really only played one style. Now he does everything. And so for me, it's definitely Hoosh. There's some guys that are up and coming. You know, there's Mark, who you could definitely make a case for. But just based on, you know, longevity and dominance for over history, I would give that to Hoosh for me. And then on the women's side, for me, it's Vanita. She's just been the GOAT for the longest time, you know, and I don't think anybody's come close to, you know, what she's done at the quarterback level and just accolades and everything else. You know, she's deserves everything that she's earned. And, you know, she's still kicking. I'm pretty sure she's like around my age. And I mean, she's just still dominating. And So, I mean, she's incredible, you know, and she's got all the same things, long history, a lot of national championships, world championships and all that. I don't think from my standpoint, it's not that close with her, for me, you know, but yeah, those would be my answers.
Gotcha. So I got to stir the pot a little bit cause that was a little too easy for you. So,
okay. Fair enough.
All right. So I'm going to mention three directors, but they all play flag football or have in the past. So it's not about how they are as a director. We're not talking about job performance here. We're talking about on the field. I need to do a start cut bench with you. So we're doing Chun, Pat, and George. Start cut bench.
Am I playing too? Okay, because this makes a huge difference. But let's just say, just at, you know, without any clarification, I would start Pat. I would bench George and I would cut Chun.
That's easy.
It's like it's pretty easy for me too. Yeah,
that's the easy one.
Yeah. Sorry, Chun. There was a time when you were good, but neither one, not to that level, unfortunately, on the field. So can't give it to you.
All right. So what made you give the start for Pat over George?
He's from Texas, duh.
No, I mean. George has, you know, they both have a ton of experience in championships, and George has been on Team USA and all that, and Pat's, you know, is coaching for them, and they both are, but Pat, to me, he still plays at a high level, and he still can do, a little bit more than George. He runs a little bit, plays defense a little bit more, not that George can't, and George has such a long history, such a top guy. For me, Pat would be who I would take, because I can use him in other ways. You know, if we're talking about literally today, in their prime, that'd be close. Like, when they were both, like, you know, I might take George over Pat in that scenario, but it would be close, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
And then there's
And then there's Chun.
I mean, hey, he's got his JAA jersey hanging up on his wall.
I'm just busting him a little bit. I love Chun. I honestly have not played or seen Chun play that much though. So for me, so there's a little part of it, even though I'm just busting him up a little bit.
Have you ever played in his league at all? Or
I play in his league now, or one of them. In he's in my backyard here in Allen for one of his leagues. Okay. But he doesn't play in that one, or he hasn't since I've been in it. But yeah.
Yeah, got you. Have you had the? I know they got that crazy rule there about if you're not someone's not wearing the correct color jersey, you like lose a touchdown or something crazy like that.
Not in the one I'm in Allen. He might have that one in one of his other. He does make up his own rules, though. I'll be playing in my own league, and they're like, "This is your rules." I'm like, "These are not my rules." Like, I don't know what you're playing by right now, but okay.
Also, do all of his officials have a little speaker box with the megaphone that transmits?
Just the most annoying ones. I don't. yes. All of them.
Well, Travis, anything else you want to share with the audience tonight?
Let me just say that I really appreciate you guys bringing me on. And, you know, we couldn't have gotten to this point and gotten Tampa where it was and set a world record without the players. And, you know, as we haven't been perfect over the years, and we've had some good events and some events that we wish we could have done completely different. And I just love that everybody's kind of stuck with us and to where we've been, and to be able to set that record was really cool. Not just for us, but I mean, that's everybody. I mean, that's for all the players and all the staff who've kind of gotten there. And so I just am really grateful that we've even been able to, you know, do this for as long as we have, because it's a very tough industry to make, you know, money in and to survive whenever you're talking like adult sports. You know, it happens to be a passion project for us, and luckily Chuck's amazing with sponsors, and so we just are hoping to be able to put so much more together, and we've got so many more plans than are on the table right now that anybody knows about, to grow and just provide some cool opportunities. So thanks for sticking with us, and appreciate you guys for having us on, and, you know, love the show, and keep you doing what you're doing. I appreciate
it. Yeah. All right, Travis, you have a good night.
All right, man. You guys too.
See you.
Wow. That was exciting. That was cool,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He's one of my top three favorite bosses.
All right, now it's your turn. No, I'm just joking.
I was going to say, I agreed with
him. Yeah, I guess that was too easy with putting Sean with those two guys, right?
Yeah, that was duh. You're not cutting either one of them. They're the first two picks.
Yeah. So speaking of like all the different locations and tournaments coming up this year, is there a location you're looking forward to, Jacob?
Yeah, there's a couple, man. I've never been to Colorado. I'm curious about, you know, trying to find why they make cream cheese Philly cheesesteaks. Not really going to try one. I think Boston's going to be a ton of fun. You know, I think New Orleans here in a couple of weeks, I think that's going to be a ton of fun. It's being able to check off places that I've never been. So it's all about the experiences for me. The football, you know, the football is great. The football families are, you know, it's fantastic to be around, but there's also a sense of being able to go and see new things. And, you know, I'm super thankful for these opportunities because of that. You know, without this, I don't know that I'd be doing all these, you know, being able to check all these, you know, cities off the list as quickly as I am.
Yeah, because most people in North Carolina don't leave North Carolina, right?
Well, you know, it's even crazier that I have electricity here in North Carolina.
I didn't want to embarrass you in front of your boss, but can we talk about the saying that you brought up? Something about ducks in water or something?
You've never heard of ducks on the water? What's wrong with that? It's a simple analogy. When you look at a duck on a pond or a duck on any form of water, when you see them go across the water, they're moving smooth. When you looked under the water and saw their feet are going crazy.
So basically every animal ever that swims.
Not every animal. Not every animal. A duck's got a certain grace to it while it's coasting across the pond.
Okay. And there's lots of ducks in North Carolina.
Oh, my God. Is this where we, you know, is this where we're at?
I mean, I don't know. It seems cool. Oh man. So as we were saying, you know, we are still kind of recapping Tampa. Last week we talked a little bit about contact. You know, we got into that. I went over the bracket with you guys a little bit, and you know, apologies to Carolina teams, blah blah, whatever. But you know, on social media, okay, so the Elite 11 came out. We all saw that. You know, lots of, you know, this person's missing and all of that, and you know, everyone's got something to say. The international list, you know, here at Clocks Running, we spent some time kind of diving deeper into Elite 11. And we've been looking at the international list and just matching them up against each other. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, the Olympic division, Olympic format with you. I know that there was rules that, you know, kind of got changed prior to Tampa. How do you feel like those were received?
Overall, well, I mean, the things that we adjusted were more geared to IFAF and the way they operate. So that way, you know, these teams can get used to, you know, what's coming down the pipeline in a few years. You know, the goal was to be able to say, hey, you know, you guys play this way in, you know, with IFAF throughout the rest of the year. And, you know, if you come to Tampa and you play in our worlds, you know, let's make it as close as possible without having to redo our entire structure. So, you know, we made some tweaks, and, you know, I think overall it went well.
Yeah, and then remind me how many international officials we had at Tampa?
Approximately 25. I think maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less. I don't remember the exact number, but we had several. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you think that did most of them officiate the Olympic division? Or
Yes, that was. I'm pretty sure almost all of them did. Maybe one or two didn't, but overall, the large majority did.
How do you did you get feedback from them at all about how the Olympic format went from their viewpoint?
From what I heard and understood from them, they, you know, they had a couple little things they had to change with themselves, but otherwise, you know, everything was business as usual for them. You know, I think time difference and, you know, trying to get through the games and stuff. You know, they use pool play to work their kinks out, and you know, just like the teams do and the players do. But they, I think they had a pretty good handle on it. I think they received it pretty well.
Yeah. I know you're like, most of the time in Tampa, you just had your feet kicked up and you weren't really doing much. You weren't on the field a whole lot, either. So, were there any games that you happened to watch in the Olympic division?
I didn't really get to watch. I spent a little bit of time during one of the championships and got to watch. I think it was the U.S. championship I got to watch and kind of go back and forth between and on the men's side. The women's division, I didn't get a chance to spend much time with, unfortunately, as we were kind of wrapping up the day and trying to get ready for Saturday. But I didn't get to spend a ton of time. I didn't really get to watch much football at all, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, naps, right? You were taking naps throughout the day.
Yep, naps, crackers, had a lot of crackers. had a lot of crackers. Got called a cracker. But let's see. Lots of mini donuts, had a lot of those.
Oh, what was your favorite? Do you have a favorite?
I don't remember. They were all so tasty. What else? I think I got a cheesesteak, a couple lemonades, you know. Just, you know.
That's cool.
Just, hey, it's vacation time.
Yeah. So I showed there was a clip that we showed on Instagram of Law. You know, shout out Curry Bombers, shout out Law. They were in the Olympic division in their pool play game. They played TC United. They ended up having to play them again in the playoffs. I was just there live streaming games. So I did my very best to stay as much out of anything. I did not want to be, you know, somebody that was then, you know, ask questions or whatever. Maybe after a game here or there, if an official asked me something, you know, I wanted to kind of give some advice there. But during a challenge, and I'll just explain the scenario to you, but Law came up to me and he was wanting me to ask the question or answer the question. Yeah. So I stayed out of it. I said, well, I'm just going to wait to hear what the director says. But so let me explain the scenario to you, and you can answer the question just so everyone's on the same page here. I will say this before I explain it. The officials and the director handled it correctly. That, you know, they did exactly what it says in the rule book. And so there, you know, this is not your chance to go back and, you know, undermine what was done on the field. So, essentially TC United started the drive. I think with like maybe anywhere between like 10 and 15 seconds left. They were down. But not more than 6 points. So, you know, we're looking at stop clock. They run one play, and I think they had to call a timeout there. In Olympic, you know, there's three timeouts. So they burn a timeout, and so then I think they're at 11 seconds. Then they do two quick passes that go out of bounds, both, you know, or a catch and then out of bounds. Yeah. So, you know, even maybe it's 6 seconds at this point. They're in the red zone. It's second down, second and goal. So before they get going, the quarterback from TC United calls timeout. All right, that's your second timeout. You got three total. They let the timeout go, and then the TC United quarterback again says timeout. So immediately, defenders on Curry Bombers are like, that's an unsportsmanlike. You can't do that. He can't call two timeouts in a row, all this stuff. So now the TC United quarterback just real quick says, okay, we don't want a timeout. You didn't call it. We won't take one. Official whistles, you know, we're ready to play. Quarterback snaps the ball, throws a touchdown. TC United goes up. Then at that point, Curry Bombers call a timeout and they want to challenge the fact that two timeouts were called in a row.
After a play's been ran?
Correct.
You can't do that. You can't challenge something that happened a play before, number one. And number two, there's nothing in our rule book that says you can't call two timeouts in a row.
So, yeah, so that's what happened. They lost the challenge for those two reasons. A play was already run, and, you know, you can call two timeouts in a row. So where is that from? Is that an NFL rule or?
Yeah, it is. I can't remember if it's a college rule too or not. I'd have to go and look. But yeah, there in the NFL, you can't call back-to-back timeouts. But you know, our rule book, we don't have anything written. And to be honest with you, we'd have to go check the high school, the Federation book, just to double check and make sure. But yeah, within the USA flag book, there's nothing that says you can't call back-to-back.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and also this is such a different realm where it's timeouts per game. You know, it's not a timeout per half. You know, and like I've you know explained to a lot of players, we run a stop clock, not a pro clock. You know, that's a very big difference too. You got to understand that right. this is not comparable to the NFL. So, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, and unfortunately, you know, and we've tried to clean it up, and I think we've done a really good job of doing that in the last few months of our rule book. We've gotten rid of the words pro clock because a lot of the places in our rule book said pro clock when what we would define as a pro clock is our stop clock mechanic. So we've gotten rid of that. We've gotten that word, that phrase out of the book. So now it just says stop clock. That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, gotcha. So that being said, you know, the Curry Bombers ended up losing that game. And because of that, they had to face TC United again in the playoffs. I was able to watch, you know, live stream and watch a good amount of the men's games. I did not see the U.S. Championship. I think it was injured reserve and, like, Rocky Top trash cans, yep. Basically. I was watching the Red Roosters and Blazers, which that was such an exciting game, international, you know, France versus Canada. And they were making full use of the foam pits. Let's just put it that way.
This is like appropriate. I don't know these lingos. I'm not a kid.
So that was really exciting. And the only thing that I will say, as far as the championship, I think it's really cool that there's like an international bracket and a United States bracket. And so there's going to be champions from there, but then they get to face each other. I think that just adds another twist to it. So ultimately it was Red Roosters against injured reserve. And this is the only thing that I'm going to offer advice, for players. Something that I observed while I was recording the game, I'm not exactly sure what happened that kind of brought on controversy, but it was close to the end of the first half. It was something as far as like, you know, you hear players all the time, like, how was that play 7 seconds? And how was it, you know, the concept of time becomes, you know, like very challenging, you know, as officials, like we don't have enough going on. We are going to tinker with time as if like we're Doctor Strange. Like we have the time stone that we can mess with without time function.
Right.
You know, right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I agree with what you're saying. I think people don't understand like your count is different than my count, which is going to be different than what the clock's count is, you know, and that clock, you know, it can give you a versus where they're wanting to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They're thinking, you know, it's all over the place. So ultimately just let the officials count it out. They're not going to screw you on time. They're going to do the best they can. They're going to make sure that you're in the right place that you're supposed to be. I think it gets lost.
Yeah, and this wasn't a rookie that was officiating. You know, the ref for this game was Lance. I think he's ran a clock from time to time. You know,
once or twice. It's okay.
So anyway, the first half it's a running clock. We all know that. Nobody called a timeout. Essentially, what happened is injured reserve thought the clock went faster than what they expected. Time expired. But the only thing that I observed, and this is what I want to share with players, is at the end of the day, as officials, we are there to do a job. We're also human, and we will make mistakes from time to time. But the more attention you pay to us, the less attention you're paying to your opponent. And I think this was a perfect example. Absolutely. In this game where injured reserve was so focused on what Lance had done at the end of that first half, which is all he did was look at his clock and count out what the clock was saying. And they spent their entire half talking to him about, well, this play was 7 seconds and this play was 5 seconds and that, you know, doing this and all this stuff. And I just happened to look over and France is in their huddle. They're talking about it. They're game planning. They're hyped up. They're excited. They had already like, you know, let's go France. Viva la France.
Viva la France. Okay. All right. This is your world. You know,
if
the French,
mm-hmm.
if that's what the French guys say.
Cool. It's like a combination of French.
Now all of a sudden, France is in Mexico.
They're like eating frog legs, and you know, viva la France. Like they don't. They eat frog legs in France, right?
No. Do they eat French fries in France?
Oh, but what do they call them? What do you call a quarter pounder in France?
A quarter pounder?
Oh, come on.
I don't know. Christian? Oh, man, I don't. Oh, what was it? yes. I can't remember what he said.
It's the metric system.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, back to the game. So, yeah. so, so, So then France, like, they get back in, the game's about to start, and, like, literally they've got smiles on their faces, they're hyped up. First play of the game, Trumpy throws a pass, and the rusher just bats it down, and he's just going crazy, like, oh, and you could just tell the momentum is, you know, completely in the, you know, on the French sideline, their players, and they ended up winning that game. So that's my only advice. I think that's a clear-cut example of, like, when maybe the players from the injured reserve side just spent too much time focused on the officials when, you know, they were right in the game. I think it was a one-score game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it could have looked different. So, you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, you know, the guys from, you know, the Red Roosters, they just went and got a Royale with cheese. And, you know, they just rock and roll from there. I had to look it up. I'm not going to lie. I could not
remember. Yeah, I know. Anyway, so the other French-speaking country that participated on the women's side, it was Sub-Zero against – was it Game Changer? I think Game Changer.
Yeah, Game Changer ended up winning.
Yeah, they ended up winning. So, yeah. You know, it was, again, just an exciting game. I think the Canadian women, I think they put the rest of the world on notice at Tampa. They said, we're here. Yeah. I mean, they won Women's Air It Out, which is like, you know, that's a pretty big bracket.
Yep.
They won the International Olympic. I know Matrix was right in the mix on a lot of the in the brackets, and then my friends, Cayenne.
Every now time we're making friends with the teams, okay?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, Cayenne. Cayenne. Like,
okay.
I was not officiating.
So. I didn't say you were.
But anyway, they won the big matchup that, you know, that fives non-contact. So, and they beat, Elite in that. Elite. So
and that was a great game, know, too. That was a really great good game.
For sure.
That was actually a great game.
Yeah. And that being said, I think, you know, whenever we post our new top 25, you know, we got voters from all over the country. And whenever Sub-Zero or Cayenne has been in the top 25, there's definitely been some feedback that we get, maybe from people that either play or coach teams like Elite, Flag Football, or Game Changer, or Apex. And, you know, they voice their opinions a little bit. But I got to say, again, you know, I got to say.
Good.
I just feel like Tampa showed, you know, that Canada's here. As far as the, you know, the women's teams, they're willing to travel. You know, they won in Nashville. They came in Tampa. They won in Tampa. You know, I don't think they're going to be messed with.
I know you're not going to keep forgetting to leave my Canadian prodigy Avery out of the conversation.
Go ahead. Talk about it.
No, well, I mean, it's just quickly become one of the best officials we've got, you know, and just a product from Canada.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that's true. And to be fair, she did have to deal with me standing next to her for probably like 70% of her games. So, absolutely. I mean, you have to deal with her only like an hour a week. So I imagine.
Just stick a pin in it.
But no, she did it. She did an amazing job. And I know, I just think she had a lot of big, you know, big time games and she manages the field really well. I also think she's got, you know, just, and I don't know if she's a mom or not, but she totally takes the mom approach with the men's players.
It's just hilarious to me.
You know? So, got big personality. I'm going to dry snitch right now. Big personalities like Rock get put in their place real quick when Avery starts talking.
You know, this is what we call growth. You're owning that you're dry snitching.
No, I just, I can't even, I'm not sure what the game was. It was, it was Supreme and Nas were playing. And I just happened to, like, walk over, and there was already, like, an official huddle going on. And I'm like, okay, I got to turn the live on. And, like, it just, it's so funny because, yeah, literally Avery's like, okay, boys, like, calm it down now. We're going to. And then I think there was another situation. It was in the fours, 35 over championship. So I think it was Hard Target and Ronin. And there was a challenge procedure that happened. And again, the call on the field was correct. Avery, but she said, I need both captains. She starts explaining the situation. And the captain from Hard Target kind of walked away a little bit. And she said, you're not going to finish. You're not going to stay to finish here what I'm saying.
Good. Put like, these guys in their place.
You know, she's like, I know you don't like it, but at least, you know, wait till you hear the end of it. So, no, that was a good time for sure. And I think as players, you know, you've got to appreciate the fact that this is an official that is traveling from another country, and she, you know, she works very, very hard to be at the top of her game.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. For sure.
All right, cool. So that being said, there is a couple other things I want to talk to you about in the wide world of flag football. And I've been waiting all week. I know you and me talked throughout the week, and I try not to bring up conversations because I don't even want to hear your opinion. But what do you okay. No, I want to wait. I want to hear it now. Now I want to hear it.
Well, whatever's convenient for you. That's fine. Go ahead.
So let's talk about the Pro Bowl games.
Okay, Pro Bowl.
So first and foremost, what do you think about the whole premise where there were like points awarded on Thursday night and like all these other games? How do you feel about that structure?
I think it's fun. I think it's, you know, we've gotten to a point, you know, people didn't enjoy the watered down tackle game we were playing, you know, in the Pro Bowl. So the NFL came back and said, let's do something different. Let's get these guys involved in different ways. Is it football? No. Is it the tackle football traditionally that we're used to? No. But it's getting these guys to do things that are getting the fans involved, getting the interactions they want, and having fun. They enjoy what they're doing. You know, I know a lot of people opt out of it, but the ones that are there, if you look and pay attention, they're having fun. So I'm having a good time with it. I enjoy it.
And so in the actual flag football game, what stood out to you from an official standpoint, from a fan standpoint? What stood out?
You know, I think the thing that stands out to me is the lax that these guys take, that, you know, you can tell they don't take it seriously. And, you know, it's, I think from a flag player's perspective, I think it's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow that, you know, these guys are talking about in 2028. Oh yeah, we want to play flag football in the Olympics. And then they watch that game and they see, you know, some of them, sure, some of them take it a little bit seriously. Peyton Manning's probably the most serious person out there. but you see some of these guys who, you know, they're jogging, they're barely covering anybody. They're not, you know, they're still making some breaks on the ball and stuff like that. That's truly to an NFL caliber. But not seeing these guys take it seriously, and then having guys and girls that go to trials and they go through the whole process of getting on the national team, to just be potentially like feel like their spot's threatened by somebody who's not taking it seriously. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. How about from an official standpoint? How do you feel that game went?
Overall, fine. I think there's from what I understand, they're pretty much told the first three quarters, let them play, let them, you know, they're. You go. I think the universal mindset of, you know, if you hustle, I hustle. I think that mentality's taken, and you can kind of tell. I mean, those guys and gals are working hard. Shout out to Desiree. She was on that crew. She was working hard. You know, you could see her pop up here and there on the sidelines and stuff. It was really cool. But yeah, I think that mentality's taken. You know, they're going about as fast as the players are wanting them to go and everything like that. So I think, yeah, you know, we get down to the fourth quarter, you start seeing a little bit more penalty flags come out. You start seeing, you know, things kind of get a little bit tighter, you know, calls that we would normally see as flag players become more prominent, which is cool. I think it's all part of that, though.
Do you remember how many officials were on the field?
I think it was seven. I think it was a seven-man crew. Seven? I think it was a traditional seven-man crew.
Okay, but that was that was a wider field, right? That was the full.
I think they played the full width, like the we're used to with the 53 and a third for the NFL, yeah. And they just played the. It almost looked like the new seven-man field.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Okay. Their center just, you know, had to sit down as soon as they snapped the ball.
OT7 rules.
Yeah. Exactly. I got to say, though, the rusher, I don't know if he was from the NFC. I think he might have been from – I'm not sure. But he's like a special teams guy. Perfect. And he was going full – yes. Yeah, full team. he was there to play.
Yes. Definitely, and he was with the NFC. He's a Dallas Cowboy, but you could see like he was. They gave him a job in the beginning, and he ran with it literally.
Yeah, I guess that to me that was a big surprise because I guess I felt, and I know I've been somebody that has continued to say this is not what I want, but what I feel like is going to happen is that the NFL players are going to end up taking all the spots. I guess the two positions that I felt like might end up, you know, staying with flag players was the rusher and the quarterback. But seeing that guy rush made me think maybe we still don't truly understand what NFL speed looks like.
True. I mean, the thing about it is it was kind of refreshing because overall he understood the assignment. Like he understood what he was supposed to be doing. And it was almost, I feel like there was somebody there telling him, and you could see like these guys are starting to get the concepts a little bit. They're starting to understand, you know, what needs to do. You're seeing the little hip moves just a little bit, not much, because there's still a lot of goofballs out there, but you're starting to see the little things start to shine through a little bit. Somebody, you give Pat and George a couple of these players in about a week to work with them, and you could see probably a big difference.
Yeah. Well, and I think we just have to be realistic about the fact that the positions aren't going to be natural, like where Micah Parsons isn't going to be rushing in the Olympics. That doesn't make sense. No. And George Kittle is not going to be the wide receiver in the Olympics. Like,
no, he's going to be playing center.
So, you know, but then even, you know, watching interviews during the, you know, media week for the Super Bowl, even the current quarterbacks, you know, are saying, that's 3 years away. I'm probably too old to play in the Olympics in that situation. And so I think that's what we have to look at is probably the players that have the potential of playing in the Olympics might not even be in the NFL yet.
True. True. I think something, if you look at it, you're going to see like the Lamar Jacksons, you're going to see Patrick Mahomes, you're going to see that style of play where they're versatile enough to where, you know, whoever's snapping can give it to a back, they flip it to whoever's the quarterback, and that now they have the run pass option, right? You don't want to limit these guys to just throwing. I think, you know, it was nice to see how Baker Mayfield played. Think he'll be a little bit too old, but Sam Darnold and Jared Goff, definitely both of those guys, way too old to even think about it. The AFC side, I'm trying to think who was the quarterbacks.
Russell Wilson.
Too old. Russell Wilson's too old. Who was the other one, though?
I'm not sure.
I can't remember who started the game because Russell did not. He came in second. Drake May, I don't think he's got – I don't think he's going to be in the NFL much longer. He looked terrible in the Pro Bowl. yeah, I don't know how he got there. But yeah, I think you're going to – there's going to be a couple of these guys who it makes sense to bring in, whether we want that or not. And I am very much a proponent for the players who got it out of the mud should be the ones to be able to still play in 2028. I don't know that's going to be the reality, though.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, so, I mean, it, you know, it was fun to watch. And I guess the thing that I kept thinking about the whole time is I just heard Chun yelling about the baseball hats. Everybody had them the wrong way.
He called me. Yeah. He's like, are you seeing this? I said, I am. Hats are all wrong. Shirts are untucked. Half of them have pockets. The other half had their cell phones tucked into their shorts. One guy had a Sharpie tucked into his shorts. And when he scored, pulled the Sharpie outside the football and slung it into the stands. It was a ton of fun. They were that game was for fun. You know,
yeah.
You can't. There's certain nuances to it that you can't take seriously, and you have to let these guys just have a good time. Nobody had a GoPro on.
Wait a minute, you can't wear GoPros?
It's news, I know. You can't wear GoPros. Why are you so close to the camera?
I just wanted to make sure I heard you right. Because, you know, I know that that's controversial lately for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not a new rule, right?
Been there for a couple years now.
And I mean, do you want to just touch on this? Seems so simple. It's a big device that could hurt somebody.
You know, and the thing about it is, like, so full. I'll tell the story. Full disclosure. Like, you know, we had a discussion as a staff about it, trying to figure out what was right, what was wrong, and really, it wasn't the ones on the chest where the conversation came up. It's the ones that, you know, look like you know. You got it right here on your head. And yeah. People running around. We had a guy run, hit, and land, and he cut his own head wearing it. And, you know, it's a liability thing. Like, you can't – having a big honking piece of plastic and metal on your head or on your chest, like, that's just asking for problems. Whereas if you're, you know, you're just free, you know, you don't have to worry about all that extra crap on you. You know, I get playing at your own risk, but you can't play with others' risk, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I just from my viewpoint, I just feel like you're not really asking permission from everybody else that's playing in that game if it's okay to wear this, you know, because to me, that's where the risk comes in, is that you go in for a flag, and if they dip, you know, that camera goes into their face, and they're like, wait a minute, this isn't supposed to be allowed. Why did I just get my head cut open by this GoPro?
Yeah, I mean, I get there's cool content that comes from them sometimes. Some of it's cool. Some of it's watching y'all run like 5-yard drags and they're terrible. So I don't need to see this version of you just running the whole time.
I don't know, man. I feel like that was cool when GoldenEye came out on Nintendo 64, like in 1998 or something. Like, I it was cool back then, but we've seen that view before. You don't remember the, like.
So we went from, hold on. Like, I just want to make sure we have the entire scene of 1998 painted for Anne. We went from Weed and Hennessy to Nintendo 64 GoldenEye. Now, I was playing that. I wasn't doing the other stuff because, you know, I was 6 at that point. You know, I was playing Nintendo 64 drinking, you know, Grape Shasta.
it's an all-encompassing.
I was going to say, that's a pretty wild year for you. We went from GoldenEye to Hennessy back. Good time.
I just think about, like, the, you know, having to make, having to be really – you know, okay, kids these days, they don't understand how good they have it, that they can literally go. You want to talk about going to Colorado, okay?
Go ahead, Grant. Let me
explain this to you.
Yeah, go ahead.
In Denver, they didn't, like, read the fine print, probably because they were all very high at the time. They didn't read the fine print about, you know, dispensaries when it first became legal in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And literally in Denver, it was like every block. And so the moment you would be like, you know, 20 miles within the city of Denver, all you would smell was weed just constantly because there were just, there were dispensaries everywhere. Kids do not understand that in 1998, for me to try to get, to try to get weed and then a device to use for that weed, I mean, I had to like get a carrot and like drill a hole into it.
A carrot?
Yeah, you never use a carrot?
No, man, we use a crushed up soda can.
That's really bad for your health.
Yeah, well, you know, I was already dropped on my head a couple times. It's fine. You know? I've used an apple, never a carrot.
Ah, it's perfect size. Pause. Anyway, all I'm saying is GoldenEye, Hennessy, weed, 1998. It all worked together as one.
Just taking notes. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that being said, what were we talking about? The GoPro. Don't you remember that in GoldenEye when you didn't have a weapon and you were like,
The chopping head. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the same thing every time I
press the button. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're wearing a GoPro, that's what I see. It's like, and then the ball ends up in your hands. Like, pause.
Yo, man. Put a ring on this thing. That's two in a row.
Okay, so one last thing I want to bring up to you. One last topic for the night. So interesting thing that came up. So IFAF right now they're kind of, you know, they are the governing body as far as international flag football goes.
Yep.
So the IFAF World Championship in Finland. I mean, you know, I know everybody who's watching that or whatever. That had so many teams. I think it was like 24 on each men's and women's. It might have been more.
I think it was. I think they actually had 64 teams total. Between men's and women's.
Like 40 and 28. I think there were more men's or whatever. So anyway, so IFAF came down with some news this past week that they have crunched down who qualifies for the World Championship. When it happens next year. So that's a really big news. It's now to 16, which is still more than how many teams are going to get in the Olympics from what my understanding is.
Yeah, same here.
Because my understanding is it's going to be 8 teams in the Olympics.
6 or 8, yeah, something like that.
6 or 8, which I've also heard that even though the United States is a host country, that there's not a guarantee that they would make it. Is that...
Yeah, but I mean, come on. They're the best teams in the world, so it's pretty obvious they'll be there. It's not a question of if, no guarantee.
I mean, last time I checked, Mexico won the World Games, bro. And women's. Okay.
All right, dude. You're holding on to this worse than like an eighth grader holding
a little
garage. That's 2022, man. That's like we were still dealing with COVID vaccines back then. So
I'm gonna hold on to it. Okay, so it's going down to 16 teams. So basically, you know, there's going to be these, you know, each continent's going to get some representation. Africa now is going to get some representation, which is exciting.
I love it.
Yeah, so that's cool. So ultimately it's going to be 16 teams. This is the thing that I know you don't want to admit it, but I think the continentals that include North and South America, I mean, that's like, we're talking about the possibility of Mexico, Canada, or the U.S. missing a tournament. I'm just saying.
They're not going to lie. They're not going to hold a continental and say, those three countries, okay, duke it out. Only one of you makes it. Those are three powerhouse teams. They're not going to do that. They're going to be smart about it. It's probably... I would say the World Championships are going to play a big impact. I don't think that's going to be the final selling point. But I think the top six teams overall are going to be who they end up taking.
Yeah.
I could see easily Canada, United States, Mexico, Japan. Who was in the championship game against the United States this past summer?
Austria,
thank you. I was getting ready to say Denmark, yeah. And that wasn't right. Austria, I could see Italy. I could see – there's so many teams that could be there, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Germany.
I don't like the whole – like, let's just say it's eight. I don't like eight.
Yeah. Like,
that's not a lot. I think we have 2 weeks with the – I mean, you could stretch it out over – I know, obviously, you don't want to play the whole time. But, I mean, you have time to play. And I'm also a big proponent of flag football. You shouldn't be playing one game a day and being done.
Yeah.
You know, we're not playing tackle football. It's, yes, there's wear on your body. And, yes, there's, you know, there you need time to recuperate. But you could play a couple games a day and be okay.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, there is that possibility that this could be a – I mean, I know we love flag football, and we're all about flag football. But now people can say that it was a bunch of bots voting, but let's take a look at who won Athlete of the Year for the World Games, you know, fan vote.
Did that finish up?
Yeah, and it was like a sports climber from Indonesia.
That's not – and they cheated. they put the bots in and went to town. They cheated.
I mean, there's plenty of bots in America. They could have changed the vote. Like,
did we use them?
Okay, for the first time ever, America doesn't cheat to win an international
team. Oh my gosh. So who was on the ballot from Mexico that you wanted to win more than anybody in the United
States? There wasn't. That's the thing.
Oh, so then what random country did you pick then?
Huh? Oh, I voted for the sports climber every single day.
Yeah, you're horrible, dude. That's terrible, bro. No wonder you won.
I just like to mix things up, man.
And give it to the bots? Dude, you gave that to a sports climber? Come on, dude.
You haven't seen those? You haven't seen them? How fast they are? They're like...
No, those are called spiders.
Oh, okay. My bad. I was watching them in the Olympics. Anyway, but there is a possibility that flag football could be one and done in the Olympics.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of sad. I think this is where the NFL is going to help. This is where having those players with notoriety is going to help. And it's going to suck. And it's going to be extremely frustrating. But that's where those names playing are going to help. I think they help keep it around. But for how long?
Yeah.
That'll be the other question, because if they do it this year, are they going to go – is it Melbourne that the Olympics are in 2032? I think so.
Yeah.
So are they going to go to Melbourne and play again? You know, it being in the United States is a major convenience for these guys where they can hop on a plane, go play, get done, hop right back on a plane, get to training camp, be ready to go. If they're in Melbourne, that's flying – I don't remember how many hours it is, but that's a long flight, a couple of days to get your body recuperated because they are professional athletes, so you're having to, you know, spend some time to adjust. There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, and so just to be the devil's advocate here, if, you know, the ever-supreme United States blows out every other country in the Olympics, is that really appealing for the rest of the world to want to continue to play it in the Olympics?
I think if everybody's competitive, I think it is.
But that's my point. Say it's not.
I don't think it won't be, because here's the thing. You're going to have all these players in the United States who don't have a place to go.
Yeah.
They're going to let's just say that the NFL takes the U.S. team, right? You're going to have all these players that need somewhere to go. These other countries would be stupid to not take some of these players in. And you're already seeing a lot of them do that right now. You know, they're taking them into these tournaments and getting them acclimated to playing. Like, I think there's a tournament right now in Thailand. They're playing.
Yeah.
You know, in Mexico, they had players go down and play. These countries are getting used to the fact that United States players are coming in and kind of integrating into what they're doing, and they're enhancing their organizations. So I think they're definitely going to be competitive. I think they're definitely going to have a reason to continue. And it's just going to be up to the IOC to recognize this and say, hey, this isn't just a fluke thing. You know, it's not breakdancing. Yeah. This is something that has some sustenance and longevity.
Okay, so Jacob, let's put you in the position of, say, you're a wide receiver on the men's national team right now.
Okay.
And at what point over the next 3 years, because, you know, there's the World Games in China this year. There's also the Continentals that will happen in Panama, IFAF World Championship the next year, and that puts us at 2026. So we have 2 more years after that of international competition. You on the national team, at what point does the writing on the wall become too apparent that then you are trying to figure out how to become a dual citizen?
There needs to be some major announcements from the NFL. I need to actually hear and see some players' names and see some things happening. You know, the reality is these teams and these countries, they can expedite citizenship if they need to for their benefit. They absolutely can make it happen. I think we talked about it last year, the water polo. I was watching, I was listening. It was 2 European teams playing. I forget who it was, but they were talking about how many different guys were jumping from team to team, and they were just getting dual citizenship wherever they needed it. These countries can make it happen if they want representation for their sports and their teams. So I think it's, you know, if it's something, if it's a necessity within some reason, there's, you know, countries can make it happen. I don't think people have to jump ship, you know, before the holes are in the boat. You don't have to jump ship before the holes are in the boat.
Okay, got it. I'm just gonna keep moving. I don't want to spend too much time on your North Carolina Saints. So I mean, the high jumper from Sweden, he like, you know, he was from like Northern California or something. So
really?
Yeah, like he, yeah, it was now, like him.
Go ahead.
No, it was like him and another guy from another country. And both of them, like, trained together in America. They both went to college in America. So
something we learned with the Olympic format with us, as far as the IOC is concerned, it's, if I remember this right, you don't have to be a direct citizen. If you have a direct descendant that's a citizen from that country, you can still also qualify. So you could have that situation where you live in the States, but if you have direct relations to, let's say, Italy, you could be on the Italian national team. It might be easier to get dual citizenship and go that route. But I think I'm trying to remember the exact way. I think I'm right with what I was saying. I'm not 100% confident. And if somebody in the comments when they watch on YouTube, Instagram, wherever they get their podcast, wants to correct me on that, I'd be glad to, you know, take that in stride. But I think it's, you know, if you're a direct descendant, you can get, you know, you can qualify for an Olympic team.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that high jumper, I don't know exactly, but I think it was something like his mom or his grandma or something like that was born in Sweden. He never, you know, he was not from Sweden, but I think that's how it was, which is interesting because he was the best, but I guess maybe he just looked at it as he could guarantee a spot. I mean, he set a world record that probably he'll never get matched. I was watching the high jump. I don't know about you, but
no, I wasn't.
Anyway, one last person I need to bring up to you because I just want to make sure that you know about this guy because he's a star in flag football. He had a great performance in Tampa. He played for Team Shrooms. I just want to make sure you know that there is a receiver on Team Shroom that is a kind of a big deal. And you know, everyone calls him TD for a reason. So You know who that is now, right?
Yes, I know exactly who it is now. Him and I have talked. Nah, he's a great dude. He's a great sport about it. He got a good laugh out of what I said last year when we did the start cut tench with him and a couple others. And I just didn't realize who it was. So we've talked and we had a good laugh about it. So
okay, all right, cool. Well, that being said, Jacob, any final thoughts for the night?
Man, I think I'm good. You know, trying to kind of moving past Tampa now, starting to set the gears on the next, you know, next couple months and what that brings. You know, March brings three tournaments to us, and they're all going to be big. And, you know, we're going to have a good time with them. You know, and we're just going to keep on rolling through the year.
Yeah, you know, just as long as there's no holes in the ducks and the boat. The boat feet are moving under the water. And I don't know. Well, you know, that being said, you know, I appreciate, Jacob, I appreciate you. And I'm so excited for season two. This has already been so much fun, and we're just two episodes into it. So, you know, thank you for coming along on this ride. And
always,
and, man. I'm sure we're going to come up with some crazy stuff moving forward, and I'm excited for what's ahead. You know, but you know, shout out to all the viewers, all the trolls on social media, everybody that chimes in and has, you know, really outlandish things to say about what's the call. But you know, the officials that chime in and say, hey, this is actually what the rule book says. Trust me, it is helping. There are a lot of people that appreciate learning the rules in this way. They see a clip of something and they see a rule, and it helps them out. So, I appreciate, you know, everyone that's doing that. You know, we're just going to keep that content rolling. And, you know, hey, we're the top dog. We're the number one flag football podcast in the world, bro.
I think so. I mean, you know, I'll say this too, one more quick shout out, and appreciate Travis coming on earlier. And I just, you know, appreciate what Travis and Chuck both have given, you know, given the flag community, you know, the platform. Without them, you know, this podcast wouldn't have even, you know, became a thing. You know, we wouldn't have the platform to be where we're at. And, you know, any players, it's more than flag football at the end of the day. They create such an amazing environment and atmosphere, and it's second to none. There's nobody else in the world that can duplicate what they're doing. So just, I always tell people, you know, trust and believe in those guys, and, you know, they'll lead us to the right place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm like watching the Pro Bowl. I'm like, yeah, they have the foam pit, but Chuck and Travis did it a whole lot better.
Yeah, they didn't, you know, they had a rope running between theirs, you know?
Yeah, no, just, for sure.
Yeah, no, it was a good time.
Yeah, so that being said, this is the best experience here on YouTube. You got to watch us. You know, I just think it adds an extra level of what this show is. But if you want to, you know, listen at work or while you're driving around or whatever, we are on every platform that you can listen to podcasts. So find us and on all of those available ones that I didn't even know existed, but we're on there. The bulk of our content is on Instagram, but it bleeds into Facebook for the old guys and Threads and Twitter. And I'm staying away from the other one because it's illegal right now. So
it's up and running. I don't know why you're worried, man. Cheeto man taking it away. We're good.
Hey, man, I just, you know.
Listen, clock's running, okay? If you want to use the TikTok, you're welcome to do it right now. We're not getting rid of it. It's okay. I told you I'm keeping it. TikTok's not going to get rid of it. It's fine.
That was really good, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that being said, you know, just continue to check us out. Wherever you want. But hey, on Instagram, we're just killing it and we're just having so much fun. So appreciate everyone. Elite 11, our bracket killed it with the international brackets. So I'm excited to see what the votes bring when we get into the quarterbacks and the rushers and the wide receivers and the all purpose. because internationally, I mean, every single day people were on there, you know, get voting one way or the other. We had upsets. We have an 11 seed in the semifinal right now, and he's winning. He might end up being the top international male voted by the fans. Like, how cool is that? You know? And,
well, then he was one of the top 11.
Yeah. I mean,
voted by the Elite 11.
As we all say, Viva la France.
Viva la France.
So we're going to try something different here as we close out. But I appreciate y'all joining the show tonight, and we'll talk soon.
Cool. Have a good night.